Newell will be back tomorrow. I'm Dave Cohen. Thanks for joining us. In the 12 o'clock hour, we're going to open it up the lunchtime buffet to anything you want to talk about. We can talk about the deployment of the National Guard to Chicago or potentially to other high-crime cities like New Orleans. Would you support that? And if not, why not? We can talk about the fact that we have an unprecedented level of hatred and negativity being espoused in our society these days and what can be done about that, if anything needs to be done about that, or anything else you want to talk about. But right now, I want to welcome in Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend.
Sure did. Thank you. And hope our listeners have as well.
Well, you know, we heard so many times over the last several months that the race for mayor of New Orleans wouldn't really begin until after Labor Day. Well, we're after Labor Day. So, so what changes? What changes now?
Well, I think what changes is you're going to see more public activity like television and radio ads. You're going to see more debates coming up, particularly debates that are televised. And so it'll be more activity, and I think more voters will take an interest in it as we get closer to the election. You know, the election's pretty close away now. It's only, what, it's not even 6 weeks?
Yeah, and in less than a month, we're going to be having early voting. So,
That's right.
Here we go. We're in the meat of it now, the heart of it now. The polls have been pretty consistent up until now that Helena Moreno has a huge commanding lead, is statistically within striking distance of winning in the primary, with the other two main challengers fighting it out for a distant second place. Now that we're after Labor Day, is there the potential to see substantial or significant change in that kind of character of the election?
Well, we could. It depends upon how these candidates go about campaigning. You know, the first thing we saw was the candidate field taking shape. And there were some potential candidates who didn't run. And then at the last minute, Royce DuPlessis, who had said he wasn't going to run, got in the race and had an impact on the race. He basically knocked out Arthur Hunter as a candidate, and then Arthur Hunter came back and endorsed DuPlessis. And so that was some major changes there that occurred.
And since that happened, Oliver Thomas has fallen to third place to Royce DuPlessis.
That's correct. And DuPlessis's entry into the race, he moved up very quickly. You know, he was not a candidate, and then all of a sudden he had jumped over both Arthur Hunter and Oliver Thomas. Now, his lead over Thomas is only a couple of points, so that's something that could easily shift.
But he's 30 points still behind Moreno.
He is, and that's the problem they all have, that she's close to getting 50% in the polls, and it's really hard for a poll to determine whether she will win in the first primary or not, because it's very easy for her to get the extra 3 points out of undecided and break 50. But on the other, I shouldn't say very easy, it's going to require a lot of effort and luck to do it, but it's still it's not a lot of points she has to pick
right
up.
Or the undecided don't vote, and we know the last several elections in New Orleans, voter turnout's been dismally low.
It's been very low, right. Or if the other candidates start attacking her, maybe they can take votes away from her, keep her to under 50, and then whoever runs second makes the runoff, and then it's a new election.
So we're after Labor Day. We're going to see more debates, more advertising, and I'm guessing more negative and attack ads, because if either Thomas or DuPlessis wants to get into this runoff, they really do have to take Moreno down a few spots. And other than promoting themselves, that's the only way to do it, right?
Yeah. And of course, the problem they have, and it's the same problem that the candidates for governor in the last gubernatorial election in Louisiana had, is they have a need. They still have a need to define themselves, because neither Oliver Thomas nor Royce DuPlessis has, in my opinion anyway, fully defined themselves in ways that would be most helpful to their candidacies. So they still have to do that. At the same time, they have to bring down Moreno. And one of the problems that the candidates in the last governor's election had, and they told me this during the election, was that, you know, they were afraid if they attacked Jeff Landry in the governor's race and pulled votes off of him, the votes wouldn't go to them. It might go to one of their opponents. And of course, the current candidates may have some of those concerns as well. The other problem that both the Plessis and Thomas has, and even though they've worked hard raising money, and they have raised a good bit of money, but Moreno has raised more money than both of them combined. So they have to be a little more careful how they spend their money than she does. And they have, you know, a double-edged sword here, as you pointed out, both, you know, presenting themselves and also attacking the front runner. So their task is going to require more money, and she has more money than they do. So that's another complication in the race.
A lot more money than they do. And just because it's after Labor Day, there's no suggestion or expectation that they're about to have some kind of windfall of donations. However, there could be some people now who are getting nervous because they don't want her to be mayor, that they may start opening up their pocketbooks to either Thomas or Duplessis. But she seems to have a pretty good stream of money, too.
That's exactly right. And usually electability is the biggest help in raising money. If people think a candidate can win, they put money there. And so they need to both make progress in their campaign and also show potential givers that they have a real chance to get elected. And that's held back some of these candidates.
You know, we've seen a trend in politics, more nationally perhaps than locally, but from the presidency through U.S. Senate races to even the governor's race here in Louisiana, we've seen where when a candidate has a huge comfortable lead or feels like they can only harm themselves by participating in debates and so forth, that they don't. That they choose not to debate, they choose not to give their opponents the opportunity to try and force them into a flub or saying something that can negatively impact their momentum. We haven't seen where Moreno seems to be heading in that direction. Even though she has a commanding lead, may win it, according to the polls, in the primary, she seems to still be willing to participate in forums and debates, and there are several scheduled coming up.
Yeah, that's true. But there is a difference in the campaigns. In the governor's campaign, Jeff Landry had a situation where he didn't want to participate in debates largely because most of the candidates running against him were Republicans. So he didn't want Republicans to be going after him. As well as a Democrat. In this particular case, party isn't a factor because the major candidates are all Democrats. But I mean, I have no idea what Moreno's strategy is, but my guess is she feels like as a candidate for mayor, she can go toe to toe with these other candidates. And she has a lot of knowledge of city government. She's been on the city council for some time, and also in the state legislature. Of course, Oliver Thomas has been on the council even longer, and Royce Duplessis has been in the legislature. So they all have enough experience where they should be able to hold their own in terms of knowledge of issues. But I think Moreno's wants to show that she can show the toughness and strength and knowledge that people will want in a mayor, and that she can do it in a debate. So she's willing to take that chance. But I don't know if that's their strategy or not. It may be something simple as, polling has always shown that voters want and expect candidates to debate. And when a candidate doesn't debate, they take a risk of the opponent saying, well, they're weak and can't do it and are afraid of us And of course, you don't want to be put into that position when you're a candidate.
Yeah, well, it worked for John Kennedy and Jeff Landry in the last couple of election cycles, that they were able to almost completely avoid debating and still maintain a big lead and win comfortably.
Yeah, it certainly did. But those elections were part of a national Trump, anti-Trump, Republican, Democrat, left-right election pattern. And the local election is really, it's more of a personality contest than it is ideological or partisan, because they're all Democrats.
How much will race play a role in this election, do you think? I think some people are surprised that Moreno has been able to garner so much support and such a commanding lead in a predominantly black city of New Orleans when she's not black.
Yeah, and what's interesting is she has the strongest multiracial coalition in support of her. She's running first among black, at least in the last poll, which was done, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So maybe some things have changed since then. But in the last poll, she was running first among the black vote, first among the white vote, and first among the voters who don't identify as either white or black. So that's a strong coalition, and that's why she's doing so well. But she is running much better among white voters than black voters. She was polling 70% among white voters and 30% among black voters. But on the other side of the coin, Oliver Thomas had almost no white votes, and he was receiving 24% of the black vote. And DePlessis was receiving the same 24% of the black vote, but he did show some white votes at about 10%. So those numbers among these racial groups are very, very important in this campaign. And rest assured, the candidates are monitoring that very closely.
How much historically, I know we've heard the mantra, the election doesn't really start till after Labor Day, but how much historically have we seen significant changes in polling numbers pre versus post Labor Day? And based on what you've seen, and you've been doing this a while, like me, based on what you've seen, do you expect to see any dramatic changes in those numbers before we get to the October primary?
Well, you know, we don't know yet, because there are two things. There are two questions that haven't yet been answered. Number one, will there be a tax? And if there are, how effective will there be? Number one. And number two, what will voter turnout look like? Will there be a big differential in racial turnout? You know, meaning will black voters vote a lot more than whites, or white voters vote a lot more than African-American voters? So we don't know the answer to those two questions. And one thing, I go back to the last governor's election, because there's some similarities here, because you had one candidate who was way ahead and other candidates trying to get in, you know, create a runoff and get into it. And then they didn't have a runoff. But I think you have something similar, where a lot of candidates in the governor's race were holding their fire until the end. A lot of it had to do with money. And I thought, and I think a lot of political watchers thought, that they waited too long to go after Jeff Landry. And people are beginning to wonder the same thing about the mayor's race. Are the candidates opposing her waiting too long to go after her? And will she be able to, you know, solidify her support base? And even though they do go after at the very end, it may not be that effective.
All right, here we are. October 11th is coming quickly. We're after Labor Day. We're less than a month away from early voting. And the mayor's race, you say, will get a little more heated and will get a little more attention as we move forward and get closer to Election Day. Ron Fauché, anything else you'd like to share, as now we are after Labor Day ahead of a New Orleans mayor's race?
Well, I think it's something that voters need to be careful and watch. New Orleanians have a habit of complaining about city politics for 3.5 years and then going and voting for people they don't necessarily like, not that long after the election. So they need to be careful who they pick, and they need to look at the issues that are most important. You know, a lot of candidates right now are talking about national issues that they will have no impact on, as opposed to city issues that they can have an impact on. And I think voters need to be mindful of that.
Ron, thank you. Always enjoy and appreciate your insight. And I know we'll be talking a lot over the next 5 to 6 weeks as we get closer and closer to Election Day. Thank you so much for joining us here on WWL.
Thank you.
I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. All right, now the time is yours. We're setting up the lunchtime buffet, and it is potluck, so you can bring anything you want to the table. You can sample what other people have brought also and comment on just about anything you'd like. I'm going to give you some statistics when we come back about the crime level in New Orleans now, and we'll see how that influences the conversation about the National Guard. I also have found some sound bites from Illinois' governor J.B. Pritzker about why he does not want the president to send the National Guard into Chicago to help fight crime. I want to hear from you, 504-260-1870, about the mayor's race, about the idea of the National Guard going into American cities to fight crime. Would you want them in New Orleans? And about the conversation that we began the program with on this 80th anniversary of the official end of World War II. Without a common enemy, history tells us that Americans turn on ourselves, that apparently we have to hate somebody. We can't go through life without hate, which is a sad commentary. But since we can't, we have to hate somebody. And in times where we don't have a common enemy, we hate people within our own country. And often it's people who are in the other political party. All that's on the buffet and anything else you want to bring after this. Welcome back. Thanks for joining us. Newell will be back tomorrow. For the rest of this hour, I want you to call me at 504-260-1870 or text me on the Oakland Art Jewelers talk and text line at 504-260-1870 with anything that's on your mind that you want to share. We've had some really good conversation since 10 o'clock this morning about a number of topics. One of them that really has gotten people heated on both sides appears to be the idea of the president of the United States, Donald Trump, deploying the National Guard to other cities beyond Washington, D.C., where he currently has troops stationed in an effort to reduce crime. Chicago appears to be the one in his sights. He, over the holiday weekend, multiple times and social media posts suggested that he was preparing to send the National Guard to Chicago. Well, the governor of Illinois does not like this idea. And I have found where the governor over the weekend was on CBS's Face the Nation and was asked about the possibility of the president deploying National Guard troops to Chicago. And here's what he had to say. All right, well, we'll get that for you in just a moment. In the meantime, let me add this to the conversation. The number of murders in the city of New Orleans so far this year, according to NOPD, as of yesterday, as of Labor Day, was at 73. Now, that is a significant decrease from last year, and especially from the number that we saw during the pandemic. But that's still 73 people who are dead already as a result of murder in New Orleans this year. 151 people, according to the NOPD, have been shot this year and survived. 146 people have been the victims of armed robberies, and 54 carjackings have been committed in the city of New Orleans. 73 murders, 151 people shot and survived, 146 armed robberies, 54 carjackings. All of these numbers are significantly lower than they were a year ago and at historically low levels in the modern era in the city of New Orleans. But I wonder if the families of these 73 murder victims think, if the National Guard had been deployed here, if maybe their loved one would still be alive. I wonder if the 151 people who were shot and survived would support having brought the National Guard in, and if that could have helped prevented them from being shot. The 146 people who were robbed at gunpoint, or the 54 people who were the victims of carjackings. And it may have been more victims of carjackings. It's the incidents, 54 carjackings. So I want to know, for those of you who oppose bringing in the National Guard, tell me why. What is the, how does the negatives of bringing in the Guard, and what are those negatives, outweigh the potential positives? Here's what the governor of Illinois had to say on Face the Nation.
He has other aims other than fighting crime. That's the first thing they should understand. The second is it's an attack on the American people by the president of the United States.
So I don't hear anything in there explaining to me why the Guard shouldn't be brought in. It's only because he questions the president's motives that he thinks the Guard shouldn't be brought in. And how is it an attack on the people of the United States? 504-260-1870. Want to hear from you on the Elkinhart Jewelers talk and text line. Pritzker also had this to say.
They ought to be coordinating with local law enforcement. They ought to let us know when they're coming, where they're coming, if it's ICE or if it's ATF or whoever it is. But they don't want to do that either. And I must say, it's disruptive. It's dangerous.
Sounds more political to me than about public safety. It sounds like this is more about, and from both sides in many cases, it sounded like this is more about party than it is about public safety. Chuck, thanks for calling. You're on WWL.
Dave, I mean, the thing that was startling that he said is he called it an invasion of U.S. troops. And, you know, Pritzker's a pretty powerful dude, probably more powerful than Trump even is. But what I think about it is
you think Pritzker has more power in Illinois than the president has overall in the United States? That's a bold statement saying Pritzker has more power.
I think he's a pretty wealthy dude.
So Pritzker is Trump.
It's Trump's wealthy, but I think Pritzker is a little more respected wealthy guy.
I'm just looking at it that way. I'm not sure why that matters, though. But all right. So answer me this. Let me make this simple, Chuck. Hold on, Chuck.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the National Guard should be deployed to Chicago, New Orleans, or any other U.S. cities to help fight crime?
No.
Why
and
not?
I'll tell you why. Because I used to live in Tucson, and I used to drive to Rocky Point, Mexico, every now and then. Beautiful beaches there. And as you're driving there, you passed up military vehicle after military vehicle with large weapons on the back of them. I don't want to live that way, personally. Just don't want to live that way.
Okay, so your reasoning for not wanting the National Guard deployed is because you don't want to live that way. You don't want to
live in
a situation where you feel like we need troops deterring crime or protecting our streets.
We don't need troops. We need to do something about the guns in this country, which we just had another mass school shooting and all the crying and all the boo-hooing. But guess what? Nothing's going to happen because it's just not going to happen to enough important people's kids for it to really matter that somebody's going to do something about it. It has nothing to do with it's an invasion. Have you seen the movie Civil War? The recent movie Civil War?
I have not.
You need to watch it because it's funny. I said this to Scoot the other day. I think I even said it to Newell one day. Hollywood has a way of predicting the future with the things that they put out there. And this movie is so paralleling what is happening in this country right now. And it's scary because what all of a sudden started to happen, there were all these little militias that started popping up all over the country with people with a lot of weapons. And if you drove through their state, they just didn't like the color of you, they'd shoot you and throw you in a big hole.
So you think that's where we're headed? If we send the National Guard to American cities, we're going to be towards militias shooting people they don't like.
Yeah, but that's not what's going to do it, Dave. It's all these little pieces that keep adding up to an authoritarian society where the rule of law, the civility of what used to be a very civil. I was watching Leave It to Beaver the other day on TV. those days have been thrown out of the window. There's no respect. There's no civility. People don't care about each other anymore. We all hate each other. If you don't look exactly like I do, you don't think exactly like I do, I just as soon shoot you and get over with it. That's what these kids are doing in these schools.
Thank you, Chuck. I appreciate the call and you're sharing your thoughts. To be honest with you, I don't think we ever lived like Leave It to Beaver, even when Leave It to Beaver was on television. Sean, thanks for calling. You're on WWL.
Hey, man, how's it going today?
Doing all right. Sean, do you think the National Guard should be deployed to U.S. cities?
Oh, absolutely. But I have another question for you. Why are we not using and utilizing the other federal agencies that are police to come to these cities?
That is happening. The president did deploy ICE and ATF and FBI to Los Angeles during the riots. And
right, but wasn't the National Guard also there?
Yes, and the active and the active military was there as well, U.S. Marines.
Well, just from the other side, the other perspective, the presence of heavily armed soldiers that are meant to protect us from other foreign nations, all that kind of thing, it's quite intimidating. As a former law enforcement officer for 7 years.
Intimidating to whom?
Intimidating to the public. You know, you have people that are out walking the street and you see a posse of 6 or 8 National Guard troops all kitted out with, you know, automatic weapons. It's very intimidating.
Is that a bad thing or is that a good thing?
Well, it depends on where they are, what time of day it is. If they are patrolling the high crime-ridden areas only at nighttime when these crimes take place, that's an excellent thing. Because they are basically at war with these thugs, if you will. And that is why they've been so successful in D.C., is not so much them just being around during the day, but also being in those bad areas late at night when all these crimes take place.
Sean, thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Sean supports sending the troops, especially if they're going to be used at night in high crime areas in cities that have a crime problem. But you heard Chuck say he doesn't want to live that way. Well, do you want to live the way that 73 people stopped living in New Orleans because they were murdered since the beginning of this year, or the 151 who were shot since the beginning of this year? I understand both sides of this argument, but I'm not hearing much from the people who oppose it other than I don't want to live that way and I don't like President Trump. Can you give me some more concrete reasons not to do this? There are real questions if the law allows it, and of course that's a huge issue. But laws can be changed. We'll continue the conversation after this. Got a bunch of you on hold. Stay there. We're coming to you next on WWL. 12:45, Dave Cohen in for Newell Norman. Thanks for joining us here on WWL. Texts are coming in on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text line. One says, if you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. Truer words never spoken. Another person says, it takes away what the Guard is supposed to be doing, keeping us free from other nations. Another person says, I never felt more safe than having the National Guard on the streets after Katrina. And somebody else texts us on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870, saying the guys in the National Guard did not sign up for this while they are milling around on street corners instead of being with family or at work where they should be. Don, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. Would you support deploying the National Guard to New Orleans, Chicago, or anywhere else to help fight crime?
Well, I live in Slidell. I put one on my corner of my house. You know, I was in the Coast Guard. It's been 8 years. Nobody ever complained when I pulled them out of the water. Nobody complained when the Coast Guard and the National Guard was pulling people off of rooftops in Katrina. And the National Guard is not for overseas. The National Guard is to protect the home front. So
Yes, I support.
Well, the National Guard can be used in both, obviously, because we've seen many deployments of our National Guard overseas.
It can, but its primary function is the home front. And it is no different than the Coast Guard. It's no different from the other militaries. They're made to keep the people safe. And when it has gotten so bad in our country that you have to deploy the military, there is a major problem.
And you think it's gotten that bad?
Absolutely. My wife, I live in Slidell. I grew up there. My wife will not go into New Orleans for dinner, for nothing.
What do you say to people? What do you say to people who say crime's at an all-time low? It's at record low levels. It's on the decline. It's been steadily heading down. Why do this now?
Well, the same thing. They fudge the numbers. Okay, crime ain't down. Crime is up. It's just the numbers are fudged.
So all these police departments in all of these major cities across the entire country are all fudging their numbers?
No, major cities are. We used to love to go to Chicago. We used to go to Seattle.
Crime is down in both those cities, according to
the numbers are down. The numbers are down. Let me tell you, politicians, just like budgets, fudge the numbers.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate the call. Dan, thanks for calling. You are on WWL. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good afternoon. The Posse Comitatus Act basically says that you cannot deploy U.S. troops to do law enforcement activities in U.S. cities.
Yeah, there has been a ruling today from a California court agreeing with you on that. But the president and his legal team insist that they have powers designated by the Constitution that supersede that.
Yeah, well, the Supreme Court may very well rule against him, just like they ruled 9-0 against how he's doing his deportations without hearings. I'll get to that in a second because it's relevant.
I want to follow up on that conversation, Don. So it's illegal. Hold on. Don, chill.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Dan. It's Dan. I'm sorry, Dan. Chill. So your argument is it's illegal, so it shouldn't be done. Congress could change that law. If Congress changed the law, then would you support sending the National Guard?
No, because that gets to my next point. The military is trained to attack and kill enemies. Law enforcement is trained or supposed to be trained to protect and serve the citizenry. When you turn the military into law enforcement, you risk turning the citizenry into the enemies. And that's not what they're trained to do. They are not trained to do that. And this has nothing to do with Trump. If Biden was president, Obama, Clinton, whoever was president, I would be against this use in this way, because it is not the proper use of the military to be using them as law enforcement. Regardless of the legality of it, it's still not a moral or ethical thing to do. Now, when it comes to Donald Trump, no, I do not trust that he would be using the military in a way that he should be using them. Just like I do not trust, like he told us with ICE or whatever, that he would be deporting the worst of the people, and he's going after low-hanging fruit, deported 18 people on a cruise ship in Norfolk because they allegedly have some material on their phones, no due process, no nothing. The Supreme Court said he's required to give everybody a hearing, or at least the time in order to get the hearing done, to be like, oh, he gave no hearings. He's just taking low-hanging fruit, taking and deporting them. Why would I trust that he would be doing the right thing with the soldiers in these cities as well?
So it's not necessarily, and I understand your objections in general, but your objections to using soldiers are made even more firm because of who it is that is trying to take this action, because it's Donald Trump. Dan, I appreciate the call. We're going to do a lightning round right after this on WWL. Got text coming in on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870. One person says, should any of these people opposed to the National Guard coming in lose a kid or lose a loved one, they'd want the U.S. Marine Special Forces to come in. Seems it's more anti-Trump thing to me. And somebody else says, the military is not trained to do police work. But rules have never been a problem for Donald Trump. He's never followed the rules a day in his life. Thank you for the text. As you can see, people are pretty emotional on both sides of this. We only got a couple minutes left, so we're going to do a quick lightning round. Let's start with Raymond in Araby. Raymond, you got 45 seconds to say what's on your mind. Go.
Yes, we could call Wyatt Earp in, but the president
and the governor has the call to call in the National Guard. And if they don't have control of their city, once again, the president or the governor can call in the National Guard to help the people with their civil liberties.
Thank you, Raymond. Those are questions of law that have yet to be settled. I think the U.S. Supreme Court's going to have to finally make the determination if the president can indeed do that.
In black and white.
All right. Thank you, Raymond. Appreciate the call. Glenn, you've got 45 seconds. They're yours.
As a former policeman, my problem with him is with this president, I don't want these guys to have total anonymity. That's why police departments got this dissent creep for abusing people. You know, I had to deal with the National Guard when we came back from Katrina, and I had to check a couple of these guys because I was getting kind of intimidated by them. I also don't appreciate these cowards from ICE doing the job with their faces covered up. All the cases I had, I've never done that because I was proud of what I did. But I'm just worried about these guys having complete anonymity or James Bond license to kill. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. Appreciate the call. I'll say this. No matter who it is that is patrolling our streets, enforcing our laws, or fighting crime, they should all have to follow the same rules. And the standards should be absolutely the same. And whether it's the National Guard, ICE, FBI, ATF, local police, state police, the rules do need to be the same for everybody. And they need to be enforced the same. And they need to be the rules that are correct and that respect everyone's constitutional rights. Time will tell if this is going to happen or not, if the president really is going to send the National Guard to Chicago. And if he does, then we will find out eventually from the U.S. Supreme Court if he has the legal right to do so. Scoot's up for the next 3 hours here on WWL. How was your Labor Day weekend, Scoot?
It was great. I mean, a lot of it was spent just kind of relaxing and hanging out. But I mean, it was a great weekend. And, you know, I can't quite figure it out, but there are certain things that you can do. And this was a weekend that I managed to do it. You can make the weekend seem longer than it is. You know, sometimes like a 3-day weekend or just a weekend flies by. But I noticed that if sometimes it's kind of hard to explain. I guess I'll try to figure this out on the show.
Yeah, I'd like to know the secret to making the weekend last longer.
Yeah, I mean, mentally, I made this weekend seem like it was longer than it really was. So, I'm ready to be back at work. It's a Tuesday already, short week. Saints game's coming up this weekend. We'll talk about LSU's victory, which is being talked about as being the biggest upset of the weekend. And it was just a great game. We'll talk about Arch Manning's debut, which in the first half was not so good, but there's more yet to come with him. The Saints are going to wear this gold jersey that a lot of people have been talking about. I haven't heard a lot of talk about it, but apparently it's popular, and they're going to debut this very early in the season. And sadly, an 11-year-old boy was shot and killed in Houston while playing Ding Dong Ditch. We used to do this. You rang a doorbell and you ran.
I did it a time or two as a kid. Sure.
Yeah, you rang the doorbell. Well, it's a different time. We'll talk about that.
All right. And I would say, if you're talking about the biggest upsets of the weekend, probably should include Alabama getting beat by an unranked team.
Yes.
So there is that. All right. Scoot's up next. I'll see y'all at 5 o'clock tomorrow morning.